Hey, it's L.A. Loy. Boy, I'm excited to start off 2024 with not only a good friend, but one hell of a vocalist. I mean, a musician that I have the utmost respect for. He went away for a little while, taking care of the family, the business, but man, he is back raring to go and ready to kick 2024 right in the balls, man. So, Josie Scott, welcome back to the Rock 30, man.
What's up, L.A. Loy? Good to see you, brother.
I'm telling you, man. So, you know, even though we haven't really formally done a interview or even talked on the phone per se, your wife has done an amazing job on social media, keeping me connected to what's been happening with you, even before you decided to get back and start recording again, just things you've been doing with your family and everything. So I have to tell you, man, you know, being with her almost 20 years now, you picked the right girl. She's amazing to have by your side and keeping you connected with the people in radio and your fans also.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I don't know what I did. I've always been really blessed and fortunate when it comes to my wife and when it comes to drummers. I've always been really lucky when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Anything else, I've had to kind of dial it in a little bit. But, man, drummers and my wife, I don't know what I did in like a past life or something. I don't know. But I did something right.
Well, they do have something in common, just kind of keeping the beat going for you. I guess that's maybe the commonality, right?
I like what you're doing with that. I like it.
Indeed. So we just had Christmas and Thanksgiving behind us. And, you know, going back to some of the photos that Kendra's posted, like on Taco Tuesday, I can only imagine the feast that you guys had and you know, seeing the Christmas tree up, man. I mean, tell me what the holidays are like at the Josie Scott household.
Well, it's a madhouse, first of all. Anything, it's always Grand Central Station at our house. But I love every second of it. You know, our youngest daughter, Jolie, is 8 years old, and she is the Christmas coordinator. She starts putting up Christmas decorations right after she takes her Halloween costume off.
Right.
I mean, I'm literally not even exaggerating. Like, so she, you know, she makes it really fun and festive, and she's like me. She loves all that old, you know, 30s and 40s and 50s Christmas music.
Man.
With like Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and all that stuff. So she's just a Christmas kid, man. She loves the whole Christmas. The other two are just like, yeah, I just want the new Xbox, and I'd like to have my TV updated.
Right, right.
And
yeah,
they just give us the list and the litany. But yeah, she's like a little Mrs. Claus. I love it.
Well, she and I must be kindred spirits, because I did the same thing and just moved into a different house this year after going through a pretty hard breakup after many years. And, you know, I lost my mom back in July. And so, you know, I took all of that, you know, and said, I'm not going to have a sad Christmas this year, because I'm like your daughter. I'm just, you know, like a kid when it comes to this time of the year, getting past the holidays. And I had that tree up, man, you know, way before Thanksgiving. And to me, it just brings joy, man. So if something like that can bring joy, you know, forget the traditions of, oh, you got to wait after Thanksgiving. I'm like, the heck with that, man. That tree's got to go up. So I love your daughter in a way of thinking.
I do too, man. And, you know, it's good to have a positive attitude like that about life. And you know, she's just full of positivity, and she's really super smart. She actually won the spelling bee this year and
nice.
For her grade. So we're really proud of her for that. And she's just a dynamo. You know, when I'm doing homework with her and when the other two kids aren't around, I like whisper in her ear. I'm like, you know, you're going to be managing your dad someday. You're going to be running this family someday. You know that, right? She's like,
it.
I know.
She's already got the aspiration. Well, that's great, man. Well, that kind of leads me into my next question. I mean, it's got to be, I can't even imagine the decision was like for you when you decided to step away from music. And you even have put it down as saying, you know, I stepped away from my health. I stepped away to sort of clean up my side of the street a little bit. And, you know, just wanted to be a good husband and a good father for as long as I could. And, you know, being a father of two daughters who are now 19 and 23, I got to tell you, man, them 18 summers went by really fast where you could have that family time. So I applaud you, man, for stepping away from the glory and the glitz, man, to be with those kids, you know?
Yeah, I had a wise old gentleman tell me one time, he said, son, you only get so many sunups and sundowns. So, you know, and like I tell Kendra all the time, they won't always be, you know, running up screaming, daddy, daddy, you know, and those are the precious moments, you know, that I want to get, you know, I want to squeeze every bit of life out of those moments that I can. Because I know someday they'll be grown and they'll want less to do with me and Kendra. And, you know, I wanted to, especially when I left the band, I just wanted more of that. It was one of the only things at that point in my life that was giving me joy and giving me, that pleasure that we can only find in the things that really matter. And I wanted to take care of that. You know, when I was in high school, they gave us an egg one day, and we had to take care of that egg for the entire weekend and bring the egg back Monday, and we got a grade for how well we took care of the egg. It was to represent, you know, a child or a family or a baby in our life or whatever. And, you know, my family is my egg, and I had to step away from Saliva back in 2010 for a combo platter of reasons: get healthier, and I wanted to, you know, take some accountability and take some inventory of my own health. And, you know, I want to, like you said, I have two beautiful daughters, and I want to walk them down the aisle someday, and I want to be alive for that, you know?
Right.
And I think there's honor in that. And I think there's honor in being a good influence on your children, and being a good husband and a good father is part of that honor. You know, it's, you know, I don't have to be their father. I get to be their father.
That's right.
And so stepping away from Saliva was an easy decision. You know, people ask me all the time, man, how did you do it? How did you, you know, it was not. It was not a problem for me at all at that time, because, you know, they were very young. You know, we had some difficulties with Jordan's birth, and we had almost lost her in the beginning. And then we had some difficulties with Jolie's birth, and we almost lost Kendra. So, you know, with those two, stocking things in mind, you know, it just sort of, you know, as they say, things are sobering, can be very sobering in your life. And those were two sobering moments that I was like, well, okay, wait a minute. I need to really get my stuff together and clean up my side of the street and take some accountability for my life and take a personal inventory here and really do my best to be a good husband to Kendra and be a good father to these kids, because I want to be around, you know?
Indeed. I feel the same way, man, about my family. And, you know, you've talked about this dream in a few other interviews, and I wanted to share it with the listeners, but basically it's kind of a metaphor, if you will. You're knocked out on a canvas there in a boxing ring, and, you know, obviously the boxing ring, if you kind of look at the overall, could be the music industry that kind of knocked you on your back, because music industry is hard. But then you do get up. You do get up off the ring, and you go for another round, man. So that's a pretty intense dream, man, and kind of gets us to where we are leading off a new year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. At the time when I had that dream, you know, I was still in the throes and still am in the process of mourning my son. I don't think you ever get over losing a child. You know, as difficult as it has been to navigate that, I just sort of threw my hands up. My initial reaction was, I just thought, this is a sign. I'm not supposed to be doing this. You know, God's trying to tell me you know, maybe I'm not supposed to do this, you know. So I kind of just, you know, kind of playing footsie with the idea of getting back in the music industry, maybe doing a reunion with Saliva. You know, we tossed a couple of ideas around. And then after that happened, man, I just sort of threw my hands up with all of it. Me and Kendra were so broken, and just, I cannot explain to you. I mean, you're a father yourself, and so I expect you have some kind of purchase of the idea I'm speaking of. But, you know, I had that dream, and I was in this boxing ring. I remember taking the glove and touching my face and going, is that blood?
Wow.
I was like, I have been knocked the F out, apparently. Like that guy says in the movie Friday, somebody knocked you the out.
Exactly.
And I heard someone behind me going, come on, you got to get up. Come on, get up, Pops. Come on, Pops, you got to get up. And I went, Pops? I was like, that's Cody.
Wow.
Because only Cody's the only kid that calls me Pops. I mean, I began to feel him pull. I get chills talking about it every time.
Crazy.
I began to feel him pull at my horse collar, my neck like that. And I was like, oh, my God, that's my son. That's Cody. And I could even smell his hair, L.A.
Wow.
I could smell his hair.
That is
and
intense.
And I tried my best to turn around. And when I turned around, there was this flash of light like there is in my window right now. And I woke up.
Wow.
I woke up. I sat on the side of the bed and I just cried. And I told my wife, I said, that's Cody letting me know, stand up and fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a great dream. Thanks for sharing that. You know, and I love all our listeners at KMOD in Tulsa. And, you know, obviously Tulsa is in the area that you're living now. And as I recall, May 29th, 2003, Voodoo Room in Tulsa, you see Kendra for the first time. And you were like, man, got on that bus, said, if I don't introduce myself, I'm going to regret this for the rest of my life. So as the story goes, from what I understand, you and a runner, you go to Walmart, you get three roses there, and you come back and you give it to her. And literally, y'all haven't stopped talking since, man. You got the 20th anniversary coming up next year. So sounds like a fairy tale almost, you know?
Man, it has been. You know, she's definitely been the most wonderful thing that has ever happened to me. And she's not only beautiful on the outside, such a golden-hearted angel on the inside. I mean, she works with children, for gosh sake, all the way down to her job. You know, she works in the high schools and junior highs and elementary schools. She is a advocate for kids in the schools. You know, kids have so many things, so many issues that they're going through these days. And Kendra advocates for them. You know, she stands in the gap for these kids and you know, fights for their rights and for the opportunities that she believes that they deserve and that her company believes that they deserve. And she's, you know, just like I said, just as beautiful on the inside as she is on the outside. And she's pretty freaking hot on the outside.
And then you get married a year later at Graceland, man. And I mean, like I said, it really is truly a fairy tale. And you and I have always talked about our love for Elvis and everything. And I had to ask you about the Elvis movie. And I haven't seen the Priscilla movie yet because I read something before Lisa Marie passed away that she didn't really like that movie. So I didn't know if you'd seen the Elvis movie with Austin and maybe the Priscilla movie, but I'm always intrigued on your intake on how Hollywood portrays the king, man.
Oh, man, you know, I sat on the edge of my seat like a little girl watching that video, watching that movie in the movie theater, like just had my whole family there, you know, like we made an event out of it, man. I had studied Austin Butler, like I was practically stalking him, you know, just knew everything about him. I was cheering for him to get the Academy Award and was just crushed when he didn't, but was proud of the awards he won leading up to it. You know, he got the Screen Actors Guild Award and the Golden Globe Award, I believe.
Yeah, he did.
You know, was really happy for that. It was just like going to see Titanic when I was a kid in 1997.
Right.
I think I cried in the first 30 seconds of the movie just from just because I was so hyped it up so much. Just during the opening credits, I turned and looked at my family and looked back at the screen, and just the specialness of the moment, and knowing that me and Kinder got married at Elvis's house, and the whole connection with Elvis in Memphis, Tennessee, and being born in the same hospital that Elvis was pronounced dead in.
Wow.
Just it just all came full circle, and I just welled up right there, you know. So yeah, it was the Elvis movie was a big deal, and I loved every frame of it. You know, Baz Luhrmann is one of my favorite directors.
Sure.
Even from the Leo DiCaprio movie he did, man, The Great Gatsby. I loved that movie.
Right.
I thought it was great. And, you know, even Moulin Rouge and his other movies, I love those too.
I just loved the way he you know, kind of modernized, you know, not trying to keep Elvis relevant. Elvis is always going to be relevant. I don't care if we're talking about Elvis 200 years from now. He'll still be relevant somehow in the music industry. But just the way he took other modern artists and put their spin on his music, I just thought that was his creative genius and what he really added. And getting the back line of Colonel Parker, which I've always thought has been left out, you know, throughout all the times of the Elvis movies. And, you know, I think Tom just really nailed Colonel Parker perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad told me a story one time. He was friends with Elvis's cousin when I was a little bitty baby, too young to remember anything that was going on back then. But my dad would be over at Graceland sometimes with Elvis's cousin, and they were doing some construction on, I believe, Elvis's grandmother's bedroom.
Okay.
And Colonel Tom was walking up through the yard there at Graceland, and they were doing the outside work on the house that day on the windowsill and all that. My dad said Colonel Tom walked up, took the cigar out of his mouth and said, "Boys, if you take one board off of that house, you better split it with me." Put his cigar back.
That is such a great story. I don't know if anybody else is as greedy as him than maybe Gene Simmons. So,
yeah. This guy told me a story one time. He said they were telling Elvis how much they were going to give him for the show at the Houston Astrodome. They were I think the promoter was telling Colonel Tom, he goes, "Okay, we're going to pay $3 million for the Elvis show. And, you know, we can't wait to have him here. And we're really excited about the show." And Colonel Tom looked at him and said, "All right, how much you going to give Elvis?"
Exactly. We all need managers like that, don't we?
Yeah, he was saying that $3 million for me. So now, how much you gonna give him?
That's great, man. Well, you know, back in the early 2000s, when you and I first started meeting, you know, music trends kind of changed every 2, every 3 years. Music can change now every 2 to 3 days, almost, with the way it just, you know, people are just scrolling through their phone. Now that you're back into it after being away from so many years, what's the adjustment like for you at, you know, your age now and your time in your career, trying to readjust of what's happening musically?
No, Hutch, man, it's a whole different world out there. And, you know, I've just tried to continue to be a student of my craft. You know, back in the day, all you had to know how to do was, you know, write songs and practice a lot with your band, talking to club owners and promoters and going on the road and beating the road up. Well, nowadays you got to be completely affluent in, you know, social media and all the platforms that exist nowadays. And, you know, I've just tried to remind myself that my passion is for the entire music business. And, you know, it is the music business. It's not just the music. It's the music business. So right. I've tried to stay positive. My manager's Wes Hoffman is really, really good psychologically with me, keeping me positive, and being around someone who's also lost a child and is so positive about life and about the challenges that we have met, and there have been many. We just take them one at a time, you know, and we, as the English say, we sort it out.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, hearing you talk like this about, you know, your physical well-being and your mental well-being, have you ever thought about putting down some of your memoirs and maybe putting out in a book, or even doing, you know, outside of touring as a music artist, maybe go on a motivational tour and speak to folks who, especially I think just, you know, people who are in bands in general, might could really get a lot from what you've gone through. I think you're sharing a great message today.
Well, I appreciate that. When I first walked away from the band, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. I just knew that I wanted to be a regular guy for a while. I wanted to find my place in the world that wasn't constantly on the road, or what did that look like? And luckily I had a partner in Kendra that would help me find out who that person was and what that looked like. You know, your partner in life is a witness to your life.
Right.
She had no problem getting her feet wet and jumping in there and helping me figure out who that person was. After we moved to Oklahoma, back to Kendra's hometown, her cousin, who works in the mental health industry, she said, "Hey, there's a thing here in Oklahoma where you can take some classes and do some online stuff, and you can become an advocate for people who are going through, you know, the 12-step program, who are trying to get resources in mental health." So I've been able to coach a lot of people, and I've got to help a lot of veterans. I've got to help a lot of homeless people that wouldn't have, you know, wouldn't have had the resources that they had just where they were. But I was fortunate enough to be able to meet them where they were and bring them into the program. Was able to work for an amazing company called Grand Mental Health here in Oklahoma, that is just a really in-depth look at the mental health crisis that's going on in our communities. And I got to work for 12 and 12 in Oklahoma, that actually was born from reaching out and helping specifically veterans that were coming home from Iraq or coming home from Afghanistan, reaching out to people and helping people live to fight another day. That makes me happy. Indeed. That brings me joy.
Indeed. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you, who's in the band that when you are doing some tour dates, I mean, are you using the same folks on the road that you're going to use once you go into the studio, or kind of bring me up to date of who you're playing with now?
Yes, I'm going to use the same guys in the studio that I'm using on the road. I love my band now. I've been so fortunate and blessed to find some guys that really are an eclectic bunch of people. You know, we're as different from each other as we are right for each other.
Right.
My lead guitar player is named Ben Hosterman. He is a guy from here in Oklahoma who's just an amazing, amazing musician. Totally understands that he has some big shoes to fill with the loss of Wayne Sweeney.
Sure.
You know, is totally respectful of Wayne and his leads and his music, with also with an eye forward on what we're going to do in the future. Mm-hmm. I have an amazing bass player named Nud. His name is just the number nine. Okay. He is such a great musician, and he's almost like my idol growing up was Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue.
Okay.
And he's almost kind of like a Nikki Sixx type character. Just an incredible bass player, a great songwriter, great on stage guy. He's got a lot of energy. And then I have this incredible dynamo. Like I said, I don't know what I did to get so lucky with my wife and with drummers.
Right.
But this kid, Justin Barber, is incredible.
Nice.
His favorite drummer is Morgan Rowe.
Oh, wow.
From Suicide.
Yeah.
And if that gives you any indication of his style or his motivation for playing drums. And of course, I have my stepson, Dynamite DeLone, playing rhythm guitar.
Nice.
And he's come so far and is so such an amazing musician nowadays, man. And I got in the rehearsal spot with him, and I just sort started kicking beats, you know. He started, you know, jamming on guitar, and that's what pulled me out of it. That dream that Cody obviously sent me, And the encouragement of my son, Dynamite Delone, has been the main thing that has pulled me out of the black hole of mourning.
Yeah.
Having Dylan in the band has just been amazing too. So I'm blessed with a great band.
Indeed. Well, you know, I'm glad to have you as my first guest of 2024, because I kicked off 2023 with Hardy, and I really didn't know that much about his background, except that I had been playing his single Jack, and I loved it. And I had some people go like, "Why are you playing this country artist on rock radio?" I was like, "Who cares? Who wants to pigeonhole people anymore?" And the more I got to learn about him, I was like, he's doing half country and half rock on The Mockingbird and The Crow. And I was like, I think this is brilliant. I'm all in. I'm going for it. And, I'm very happy to hang a Hardy Award on my wall now just because I was there at the beginning. But thinking about you, man, I mean, and your roots in Memphis there, it seems like, not to jump on the bandwagon, but I mean, for you, it just seems kind of a natural progression to kind of go into that mode a little bit yourself, right?
First of all, I want to say, I totally 1,000% feel every syllable of what you just said. I discovered Hardy a while back. I was early on Hardy too, and I was telling different people about it, and they were like, "Well, it's this or that, or isn't he the guy that wrote for Florida Georgia Line,
right?
And isn't he this, isn't he that?" I'm like, dude, he's all of that. He's all those things, dude. If it tastes like banana pudding, damn it, just eat it.
That's right.
When The Mockingbird and The Crow came out, I had it cranked so freaking loud in my car, and it was one of those moments that hit me so hard. Like, his music hit me so hard, I had to pull over, and I almost got emotional about it. You know
me
what
too.
I'm saying? Like,
me
it
too.
Was just, it just touched me in a place. Like, I was just like, I love this, man. I just love it so much.
And look at Jelly Roll. I mean, look at Jelly Roll, what he's done. I mean, I felt like I was at church when I went to see his show recently. It was like, holy cow, man, this is amazing.
And what a great guy, man. He is
super guy.
I cannot express highly enough how much of a wonderful, sweet, generous, kind, charitable, heart of gold type person that Jelly Roll is, man. He has such a great testimony and such a great story. One of the most deserving people to have the kind of success that he's having. Nobody deserves it more than Jelly Roll, dude. Nobody.
100%. I posted something on Facebook a few days ago, and moving into this new house, I finally just decided to collectively take all the plaques and gold and platinum records, and I decided to put it on one wall. And you replied, "Legend." And one thing I was saying is like, well, one of them is yours, man. So I'm glad to have you as part of the mix. It's been part of my career. But one I don't have has that Spider-Man face on it like you have on your wall. And I got to think, as a kid growing up as a Spider-Man fan, and then all of a sudden you've got a record award for Hero, man. That has got to be one of the ones you kind of stare at occasionally and go like, yeah, man, that was a good day.
Just to be at the right place at the right time, because I think timing, as they say, preparation, luck is where preparation meets opportunity.
Right.
I think, being at the right place at the right time with the right song, you can't make this stuff up. You know what I mean? It's something that either happens or it doesn't happen. I thank God every day that I have been blessed and lucky and fortunate enough to be in those right places at the right time, and had those people in my life have allowed the Heroes and the Click Click Booms and the Ladies and Gentlemen's to happen to me. Bob Marlette is another one that has always put me in the right place at the right time. Being in your life since the early 2000s has been such a blessing for me, because like Lizzie Hale says, you're that guy that you chase down and go, "Will you please interview me?" And then you go, "Hell yeah." And then you just have given me those opportunities my whole career, and you've always been more than happy to put me on your shoulders and let me get that visibility. And I'm just so thankful for that, man. Like Lizzie said, you you're an amazing human being, dude. And you, there needs to be some kind of Grammy or something with L.A. Lloyd's name on it.
Well, dude, I appreciate that. I mean, and I recall back many years ago and something you said that has stuck with me. And we were tossing back a few that night, so we were getting our drink on. But, you know, you were talking about, it was like, let me tell you something, dude. You are family. I treat you the same way I would treat anybody in my band, anybody in my family. If anybody came up and disrespected you, I'd drop their ass right on their fucking back right now, dude. And I was like, dude, I'm your brother from here to the end of time. So thank you for that. Thank you for that, man. Well, look.
Yes, sir. And that stands to this day.
That's what I'm talking about. I love that, man. Well, I wanted to have you on here 2024 at the beginning and give you a real quick chance to say, you know, to the fans listening and the listeners today, here's my goals this year. Here's my milestones I'd like to hit. Maybe touch on a couple here because, you know, we got 12 months ahead. It's a big year for us.
Yeah, man. To the fans, I just want to tell the fans how much I love them and I want to thank them for being so supportive of my comeback. And, you know, this all started on stage with Wayne Sweeney at Blue Ridge. And I want to acknowledge the fans from that point forward, man.
Right.
Because when Wayne passed away, God rest his soul, my best friend Scott Willis looked at me and he goes, Josie, thank God for Blue Ridge, man. Thank God for Blue Ridge. Wow. And I feel the same way, you know, get kind of emotional even talking about it. But, you know, from that moment forward, I got to see, you know, the fans let me know that I could just pick up right where I left off. And there, you just can't ask for anything better. Rock and roll fans have been so sweet and kind to me. And hearing the fans come up to me every night after the shows and say, your music helped keep the shotgun out of my mouth, or your music helped me quit doing drugs, or your music helped me get through a bad relationship with my parents. Or I used to be in my room while my parents were fighting and I'd turn your music way up, you know, and I used to be that kid that was in my room while my parents were fighting. And I knew how scared it makes you and how fearful it makes you feel and how you don't expect the people that take care of you to act like that sometimes. And music is the only thing that helped me get through those times. So seeing that music, that my music has helped get them through those times is just something that I could never repay them for. And I will be indebted to the fans for the rest of my life. But this year I plan on recording some brand new music for them. I'm going to continue to beat the road up. I love being on the road, and you, LA, for always being so supportive of me and my career. And I just really, really am so grateful and thankful to the fans and to you for making me your first guest. And Hardy was your guest last year.
That's right.
What? That's awesome, dude. Oh, I'm sorry. I got all in bumps.
I love it, dude. I knew this was going to happen. We got on the air together today. So real briefly, what is one song that is always going to be in the Josie Scott set list? You know, I want to play that song today as we kind of close out the show. But what is one song that, you know, maybe it's a fan favorite, maybe it's your favorite, but one that you go like, dude, this is my, you know, You Give Love a Bad Name by Bon Jovi. You're going to go to a concert, you're going to hear that song. What is that one song for Josie Scott?
There's a part of the show right at the beginning where we go from superstar into ladies and gentlemen.
Nice.
For that little brief moment, I don't know, I feel like, you know, that three-ring circus conductor that right. I always wanted to be, you know, the guy with the top hat. And, you know, I just feel like I'm completely in my element. I tell my kids that's where the guy that pays the bills takes over.
That's exactly right. Well, that's a great way to close it out today, man. Well, thank you again for coming on here and helping us kick off 2024. And, you know, I got to be in your presence next time. I'm glad we have technology that can work it out for the timing for both of us to get you on here at the beginning of the year. But I look forward to seeing you, seeing the show, seeing some new songs, and definitely playing that new music. You know, as soon as you send it to me, it's going to be on the Rock 30, my friend.
Oh, thank you so much, man. And thank thank you so much for having me and making me your first guest of 2024. I'm so grateful. Thank you.